Good morning, everybody. I'm Barbara Compulsive Eater. This is our CEA House Statement of Anonymity. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level, Tradition 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and other public media of communication. Thus, we respectfully ask that CEA House speakers and members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on audio recordings or in published or broadcast reports or meetings, including those on the Internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other compulsive eaters who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that CEA How principles come before personalities. A further note about anonymity. Out of respect for others, please do not take photographs during any of the events at the Global Convention. Also, be considerate when taking photographs around convention venues. Take care that you do not capture images of CEA How members, family members, and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in your pictures. Please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable CEA How members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social networking sites. We thank you for your cooperation and observance of our tradition of anonymity. Just another reminder that this workshop is being recorded. Once the workshop is recorded and reviewed by the CEA How World Service Board or its delegates, it will be added to the CEA How website, where it will become part of the public domain. So if you do want to come up and use this microphone to ask a question, we ask you please sign this release waiver up here on the table before you speak. It is up here on the table. Thank you.
And I'm Leanne. I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm glad you're here today. I'm more comfortable standing up. I don't feel as comfortable sitting down. I'm so grateful that we have workshops and that we have meetings and that we have a convention. It gives us the opportunity to get together, to get to know each other, and hopefully learn something. And when we say workshop, to me, workshop means you work. Some people think they can come into a workshop and sit down and talk to the person next to them, maybe take a nap, and then they say, oh, I went to that workshop, just like we go to a meeting sometimes. So with that being said, this is a working workshop, and we all get the opportunity to participate. All we need is to be sure that you sign in before you speak and that you speak into the mic, even if you have a question. Okay? This is the emergency preparedness, and this I have to show you because I believe truly, 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 this is your workshop and you're working. That's all the notes I got. Okay? We are going to do it together, and we will work it together. The emergency preparedness that you have has the post-it note that reminds you to count your blessings. And we have hurt feelings in there. We have the gum, so you remember to stick to it. Stick with it. It's worth it. Candle is to share your light with others. It doesn't matter if you have one abstinent meal. If you have no abstinent meals, you get to share the light you have by working this program. Your eraser lets you know every day you get to start over. And we will go into detail about these different things as we go along to help you remember. And the matches are to light a fire under yourself and others. In other words, carry the message. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Barbara, And Barbara is going to talk to you about two of those items, and then she'll turn it over to Lisa. And Lisa will discuss her two items, and then I'll come back, and you'll hear me one more time as I discuss my two, and then we will put you to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. I'm Barbara Compulsive Eater, and this is such a treat to be with everybody. Briefly, let me qualify. I started CEA How way back in September 14th, 1999. 11 years in and out, this and that, losing, gaining, lots of day ones. I returned February 2010, pretty willing, to the Las Vegas Area 2 Assembly. I stayed that whole weekend. That was big for me. Originally, I lost 32 pounds, but regained 42. So it was a 11-year period of that regaining part. I always say to my friends, if your body loves this program, that weight will peel off you. And it always did peel off me in that first 30 days. When I returned February 2010, I then lost, originally lost 32, but regained 42 back. So I released 45 pounds. And I had achieved goal weight by July of 2010. And I basically have been at goal weight since July of 2010, which is totally amazing to have the same clothes in my closet and really have all the clothes in my closet fit. A couple slips, which I may or may not talk about. Thank goodness they were slips. And my back-to-back currently is May 7th, 2014. And as of this week, 35-pound weight loss. So very, very grateful. My emergency kit items are gum and the notepad. And I love these items. You know, in our tools, it tells us we can chew gum, sugar-free gum. And for many years, I never took advantage of that. But I am finding we have delicious gum items out. I'm always cautious where and whom I'm chewing with, because I remember in college I was sitting at a table similar to this, and I was in the front row, and I was chewing gum very vigorously, and the instructor cautioned me to maybe not chew that vigorously. So I always think, what do I look like chewing this gum? But I do find that gum helpful now and then. As Leanne presented this idea of this workshop to me on an emergency kit, my thoughts went to what have been my obstacles to this program? Where have been my greatest obstacles? And I'm going to have to give a couple minutes to my husband. I hope you won't think this is too, I don't know, whatever. I've had to get past my husband. He immediately was not in favor of this program. And I was not going to, certainly I wasn't going to take an extreme measure and get a divorce over this, but basically he lost his favorite food partner when I started. He also loves to cook, and he's a wonderful cook, so this gave him restrictions there. And I'm going to just say, to some extent, he can be a bully. Maybe it's a controlling issue. Maybe it's a bullying issue. And other times, he's sweet as anything. So we go back and forth with that. It plays out in a restaurant. He would love to order for me and then share. So he would get two of his favorite items. At home, he likes me to taste items as he's cooking. And, you know, as I thought about how to complain about him, it's just take every tool. And he's been an obstacle to me. My blessings have been, and the more I think about this program and my blessings, It's God, you know, it's God has done for me what I cannot do for myself. I have been blessed with patience and acceptance at just trudging along day by day with this program. And it even played out yesterday. I was up early where Lisa and I are, Phoenix area. I was up at 5. We had to leave. We expected to leave our house at 8, and I flew here. And I had a lot of those miscellaneous things to do that you just don't like to do before you're traveling. And yet I knew I had not gotten my third meeting in for the week. And there was the 5:30 meeting on the phone bridge. It was an As Bill Sees It meeting. And, you know, if there's one thing that's going to get me pulled together, it's following these tools. You know, make that outreach. Go to that meeting. So I did pick up the phone and back to my husband. I don't know why he's been getting up early and coming in the living room when I'm doing my writing and my reading and my listening and my calling. Anyway, there he appeared, and I knew he looked at me thinking, you're going to this convention? Do you need to go to another meeting? You know, what is all this about? So we exchanged those looks, and I just said, I know you think I'm crazy. But I'm going on this meeting at 5:30. And, you know, it did pull me together, and I was able to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. What I want to tell you, the swing in my husband is, if you are dealing with anything like this, and I also liken it to practicing this program when I'm out to eat with my friends, or the issue of eating a meal at a friend's house and having to make that call and ask, what are you serving? You know, as if she's going to kill you. It's practicing this program in front of other people that challenges. It can challenge me. But I told my husband I was going to talk about him, and so now I'm to the part I'm going to give him some accolades. Now, when he's cooking, he absolutely follows this if I'm eating it, which generally I am, he follows our food plan. And he will go so far as to, when we are with friends and he'll like to talk about his cooking, he will explain to them how he has to modify his cooking on a particular recipe. And he has done a wonderful job on that. Some nights, if I come in from the Wednesday night meeting and I'm coming in at 7:15, some nights he's measured my protein. He's got that all set up for me. And, you know, I'll give him a call on the way home and tell him, turn on that vegetable, but don't let it cook to smithereens. Could you keep your eye on it so it doesn't cook to smithereens? He's done a turnaround, and it's been with the help of our higher power, absolutely. And his absolute, the bottom line, the worst comment, and trust me, I could go into a little more. It has played out poorly as we have traveled. And we talk about going to Asia, and he's well traveled. He will make the remark to our friends that we cannot go to Asia because Barbara cannot eat a certain food. It's one of our grains, and he's quite aware that that grain is very prevalent in a lot of foods, a lot of restaurants. And of course, it sounds ridiculous, you know. And I just, as he will say that now and then to friends, I will just try to maintain a straight, just sort of take a breath like I did. And we'll see how this is. I don't know where we're going with this. But as recently as last week, he said, I know how we can do it. We will go with another couple. And then he somehow thought he would have to eat alone. He said he would not have to eat alone. So, you know, slowly, he's sort of figuring out solutions to all of these situations. So, absolute miracle. Another obstacle I can get into, and I'm going back to my sticking with the program, is I can fall into the victim mode. And
I have a wonderful life. I am very aware of it. I get to play golf, and I get to play duplicate bridge, and I go to meetings, and that's really about, that's primarily it. Well, as you know, in golf and in bridge, you've got a score. And if that score isn't so good, or that experience hasn't been so good, I'm very aware. I can take a lapse into the victim. The parts of the program that quickly help me are going back to the concept of acceptance. And what about gratitude? That this is what I'm spending my time doing. I'm fortunate enough to be in this beautiful environment outside or indoor with wonderful people playing bridge. So, and I also know that whether I'm winning or I'm losing, I'm me. And it's the next thing I would like to talk about is, you know, this program takes so much time and effort. And many times I walk around my house and I think, why am I doing, should I keep doing this? Should I do this one more day? I mean, and what's ahead? I mean, I can sort of see myself getting more involved and more time with this program. The answers I give to that, and I sort of had fun thinking about that. Certainly, this program takes me to my faith in my higher power. Thank you. This is one thing. I do like a lot of beverages. Three is the right amount, too. Q knew that. As I was thinking about, I guess it's the blessings this program gives me. Absolutely, my faith. It gives me some keys to my, links to my faith. I love the authenticity it gives me. I always say when I started 12-step programs, and it has been a long time, I came here with holes in my heart, and there's been so much wonderful repair. And I just, authenticity rings to me. I guess I can be myself with you and feel good about it. Certainly a healthy, right-sized, strong body. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want that? And it gives me a, you know, if I say choices, if I say freedoms, we all can relate to that. I love my choices. I love my freedoms. I want to talk a minute about happy, joyous, and free. And I just want another blessing of sticking with this program. I want to talk about grandchildren. Talked about husband. Now I'm going to do grandchildren. I just had a visit with two granddaughters. And these granddaughters, this is like, when I go to Detroit to visit them, we have two families. We have my husband's son's family, and that's, to me, the easy family to visit. My son and his family, that's the hard that's the hard one. So I go to my stepson first, and they're closest to the airport. But my son, you know, it's been the past issues, which we have gotten past a lot of them. But surprisingly, I also find his daughters, it's also as difficult dealing with them. They require a lot of restrictions. Restrictions is my new word. Discipline used to be my old word. Anyway, they came to from Detroit to Arizona. And I just want to tell you a couple of some of our happy moments. First off, I was delighted with all our activities that we could enjoy. We went to a play, which actually turned out to be not so appropriate for them. I was able to take them golfing. My oldest granddaughter went to yoga with me. We ate three regular meals every day, and I really think that set us up for just a pleasant, safe visit. One of the cute things that Sarah said, and these 14 and 15-year-old girls, and if you've been around them recently, they take a lot of pictures. You don't do anything without a picture. So Sarah, we were getting rid, and thank goodness the restaurant issue was easy. Anyway, at one, and it's not just getting dressed in one outfit. You know, you got to go through a couple choices here. So we were heading to a restaurant, and Sarah came to me, and she said, I don't know if I want to wear this tonight or if I want to save it for the restaurant. Oh, it was sweet. And I'm not going to take, I've got a couple more things I want to talk to you. I need to talk about the notebook. But my stepson, his name is Kerry, and my husband's mother took us on a cruise this summer. And there were 16 of us. And it was a hard trip for my stepson and his wife, and they have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. The 2-year-old was complicated. But my stepson, and this has been, we've been together, I think he's 37. We've been together since he was 12. So we've been together a long time. But on the cruise, we were on a boat called the Dream. And they have an absolutely fantastic water slide. And we looked at, and you have to, I think, climb up four stories to get to the top of that water slide. And, of course, we looked at it, and we talked about it, and we sort of decided who was going to go down with whom. And so finally at that moment where we had to make a decision, Kerry and I decided to go. So, you know, I was kind of afraid. Anyway, we traipsed on up, and I said, I'm getting a little nervous. And we got on that little raft, and, you know, we made it down. And, you know, it's good to have everything shaken up and a good scare now and then. It lets you know you're alive and well, and you're still standing after it. But afterward, he looked at me, and he initiated a hug. And that was the first time he had ever done that. It was so sweet. And then at the very end of the cruise, we got off that ship, and we still had 2 more days. And the minute we were off that ship, he looked at me again, and he sighed. He says, I got to give you a hug. He says, I'll be much better now that I'm off that ship. It was just so sweet. So, you know, we wanted to include the happy, joyous, and free moments. And, you know, I don't know. I think they are just more special with abstinence. I get to be present. I get to enjoy it absolutely thoroughly. And my second part, this is the easy part for me, the notebook part. I've loved writing. I'm not a writer, but I've loved writing since the get-go, since my very first inventory in another 12-step program. It was the days where we would go to someplace and get it Xeroxed. I had that gosh darn inventory Xeroxed 4 times because I was hanging on to it. I was not losing it. Maybe it's my ego. I love being an introspective person. There's been a lot, that onion has been thick. I've wanted to uncover it. I've wanted to get peaceful. I wanted to get happy. I wanted to trust myself. I've wanted this life all my life. So, with writing, the funny thing is I'm the chairperson of the store. And if you've been to the store, we have a ton of writing materials. Our Phoenix CEA Howe ladies, we have decorated the old 8x11.5 spiral college ruled notebooks with positive statements 12. So I use that every day for my, you know, I list my three people I've called, I list my food, and then I do my writing. So probably, I know some people use a computer, but I use that notebook. Our itty-bitty notepads, you know, are great for to-do lists. And boy, do I love that to-do list. I'm so important with that to-do list. And I have to tell a joke about Leanne. April Fools, I don't know how you said it to me, but I guess I said to you, what are you doing today? And she said, nothing. Then she said, April Fools. So our itty bitty, we have a lot of itty bitty little notebook pads. Some have our current logo on them, and some just have snappy program sayings. But, you know, whether we use it for a to-do list, certainly a gratitude list, that was one of the first things I learned. I can always, honest to Pete, if I just think through that gratitude, it can help me to turn a corner. Or whether I use it for a letting go and letting God list. Just always a help. And I just wanted to conclude with, is the work done? No, it's never done. And I loved when Ray proposed the idea, what is my purpose? I love to think about that. I know my life is finer with abstinence. And my goals, I was just thinking about that this morning. Absolutely, there is room for improvement in criticizing. I still can get in that critical mode of, oh my goodness, he should be more like this, or he should do it this way. I have to keep working myself out of that. And my best resort for that situation is abstinence, but acceptance. If I can come back to acceptance, it makes things so much easier. Another glitch I get into is I like to think I'm balanced. I like to think my life is balanced, but still, you know, if I say to myself, if I could just take one little activity off each day, I could possibly be less tired and a little more balanced. And I think that would be it. Thank you, everybody, for coming this morning. And I will turn it to Lisa.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Lisa.
And on the phone bridge, I'm Lisa from Phoenix. I'm a compulsive eater. Yeah, what a great day. What a great day we have. And a day of blessings that God's given us. And I have been blessed to have these two items from the 12-step emergency kit. I have the Band-Aid, and I have the candle. And briefly, before I get started, I just want to tell you that I qualify to be here. I just, in case you had any thought, my husband said to me this morning, okay, when you went to this thing yesterday, did you feel okay? I said, yeah. He said, no, I mean, were you the right size? Because I'm always saying to him, oh, I wish I was thin. And so there's still a lot of work God needs to do in me, because my view of myself is much different, I hear, than what other people see. And I see the flaws, and I see the skin that's a little wrinkly. And I see that I'm not 21 anymore. And, you know, just those many things that I see changing over time. I have gained and lost enough weight to, make several people. And I used to say that I've lost between 55 and 60 pounds in this program. But now I hear a lot of people saying, I've lost a total of, and so I'm going to go there, I've lost a total of 90 pounds. And 90 pounds, man, that's a lot. There was a time in my life when I was real anorexic, and I got down to about 115 pounds. And today, I'm not too weirded out saying that I weigh about between 150 and 152, 53. 53 is where I start going, ha, 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 ha. But isn't it so funny? If I'm 152 and a half, then I'm like, okay, I can live with this. And if I'm 149, it's like, bravo! So it's a constant deal. But I like so many others have tried every weight loss program in the world, and many times I was successful until I totally wasn't anymore. And there's no willpower left in me to do anything to do with weight. Although I am a very stubborn person. I'm Norwegian. And I learned growing up that Norwegians are extremely stubborn. And I started some years ago going to meetings and saying, I'm a recovering Norwegian too. But I use that stubbornness today to stay close to my program and to work it as well as I possibly can. So anyway, I do qualify. And I'm grateful to be here. I came in to see how by mistake. And at the first meeting, Judy W. was waiting there for me. And she was my first sponsor, and it changed my life. And I'm so grateful I came. I thought I was going to another 12-step program. And I went because a person told me that there was a guy she knew. And this was a professional person, a professional counselor. A guy she knew was in this other 12-step program, and he'd lost 100 pounds. And that was what I was looking for, because in the other 12-step program I was in, I was very successful over the years in working the steps and doing all that, but I never saw any physical recovery. I never lost any weight. I just kept going there and getting more and more peaceful, but the bottom issue for me was that I ate compulsively, and I needed to get on top of that. And I came in to see how, and I have been so blessed with all the parts of the program, but maybe and most specifically the abstinence. I have never in my life experienced the peace and serenity I have in this program with abstinence. So I do qualify, and what I wanted to do is just briefly tell you about my two little things. First, the Band-Aid. And when I thought of the Band-Aid, I thought about the fact that a Band-Aid can be a couple of things. It can be a quick fix. You put a Band-Aid on and the bleeding stops. You put a Band-Aid on and you cover something up. It can be both good and bad. But it can also be the beginning of healing. And for me, the program, starting with abstinence and the daily writing, was the beginning of such a deep healing in me. Because I think Barbara said it well, that when I came, I had all kinds of holes. In fact, I could say that there was such an emptiness in here, in my heart. And I had been going to counseling for, honest to God, I've been in more counseling. There are a lot of rich people out there because of me. And I've given them a lot of my money, dang it. And I've talked and talked and talked about this ache and this emptiness. And I still talk about it. But it's so much better today. It's just so much better. And I think the thing is that the gift of the program for me has been the gift of abstinence, and with that, I'm able to look and see. Somebody said last night, I think it was, about the clarity in people's eyes, and that's what drew me in. So the healing that I've gotten in this program is immense. I'm going to come back to that. I don't have a lot of notes either. I just felt so compelled with this, the idea of this workshop, that I'm going to kind of bounce around a little bit. But I also have the candle. And for me, the candle was the light of my higher power in my life. That's where the healing has come for me. It's that grace, that connection, that sense of the awesomeness of whatever God is. You know, I was one for many, many years who had great faith. And it was my first kind of conscious contact with God. I found in this program that my higher power today is much different. I haven't lost what I had, but my higher power is more encompassing now. I feel like when I get to heaven, and I still believe that there's heaven, I think there are going to be people there. I think you're all going to be there. I don't think we're going to exclude people. My husband talks about in my heaven, in fact, we both do. In fact, there's certain foods that I no longer eat that in my heaven, I think we're going to be able to have. I'm often thinking about that. It's not going to make me fat either. It's not going to make me compulsively either. It's just going to be good. Isn't that funny? I really am a compulsive eater, aren't I? I'm thinking about food in heaven. Okay, baby. But that presence of God, you know, I actually even, some people would think I was terrible in my old church life, I meditate. And I actually enjoy it. And all I know is that when I stop and get still with God, I have a better day. I have a moment, a period of time in which I am absolutely centered and I'm living inside of my body. So many years I didn't live in my body. I was kind of out here, you know, looking down. And I was not fully integrated. There was a time when I said, "There, I have several Lisas. There's church Lisa. There's the Lisa that presents herself professionally and doesn't say any bad words. Actually, there might be four, because when I go to Butte and see my family of origin, there's another trash talking Lisa that pops out." And because I grew up, you know, I came of age in the hippie days, and we had a lot of words that began with the letter F that it's just not polite for a 64-year-old to walk around saying things like that. But when I go to be with my sister, all bets are off, baby. but there's been a lot of healing, because what's happened is, and thanks be to God, my higher power is amazing. All those people have kind of gone, and it's all here. And like Barbara said, I am me. I'm just me. This calm exterior that has always covered up such a mess of emotion and fear and resentment. A little resentment goes a long way in my family. That has all been integrated, and the healing process is going on, and I am much blessed. So I'll go from there to talk just a little bit about some of the things that have come up in my period of abstinence that have threatened to kind of push me over the edge. And I have, in the first 3 years, I came into the program in May of 2011. I lost all my weight probably by just sometime after. In December, I had to have almost all of my teeth pulled. I have implants now. But in December of that year, I had that done. So by mid-January, I'd lost all the weight. And then I had to keep it off, but I had several slips along the way. And my slips, fortunately for me, didn't cause me to leave the program and go out and gain a bunch of weight. But there was a time when I went out and regained in an amazingly short period of time about 10 pounds. And by the grace of God, I was able to come back. So some of the obstacles I wanted to mention were, for me, pain or health related or something about my physical self. And I think that's important because so many people I talk to on the phone bridge are having issues as they age. One lady I talked to in the last week or so had two total knees done at once. And there was a day when I was in nursing that you never heard of that happening at all. And now they're doing that. But she's gotten through abstinently. It's amazing. And for whatever reason in my life, I've had several physical things come up. I had all the teeth gone. That was an interesting thing. And most recently, I think the difficulty, I've never had a problem with my stomach in my life, but I've been having like heartburn and then some kind of crazy belly thing going on for the last 3-4 months maybe, to the point that, you know what my mind tells me to do if my stomach hurts? Guess. Have something to eat, because that ought to help. And I have to think that through. I know that there's a choice of having a medical abstinence if my doctor were to say that. I haven't had a doctor say, you know, really, Lisa, you ought to be able to have whatever you want to have, and you'll be able to keep the weight off. And you can eat whenever you want. I haven't had that happen yet, so I'm just sticking with the program. But that is something that's been a problem, and I thought maybe somebody could relate to that. What I've done with my stomach issue is the same thing I do with everything else, and I go to the tools. I don't consciously think, oh, let me think with the tool. I'll go meeting, abstinence. But what I do is stop the process right where I am. And I go to God first, my little serenity prayer. You know, I've never said the serenity prayer and had it be so meaningful and so powerful in my life as today. It was just words, but it's not words anymore. And a dear, dear sponsee has me saying the serenity prayer with her each day. And that has, what I've noticed with that is that it just centers me. It centers our conversation, and it pulls us together in a way that it's really profound. But I say the little serenity prayer, and then I think, okay, what can I do? And the action I can take is I can get on a meeting if it's time. I can make a phone call. And in the last, sometime in the last week, I remember a day that I was struggling so much with not feeling well. And really and truly, I have learned that that's a dangerous, dangerous time for me. And I, honest to God, felt my body being magnetically pulled to the refrigerator. Stop. And God grant me the serenity. And then made a phone call. And I felt a little better after the first one. Made another phone call. Nobody answered. But what I've found is the miracle happens whether they answer or not. And the miracle happened for me. And I didn't continue eating. Or didn't start eating. And I didn't fall into that pattern. So just a little example of what I see as an obstacle. And what the heck? Turn the page here. The other thing I wanted to just mention is that there, for me, what Barbara said about the relationship issues, that's another big trigger for me. So emotional, anything. Since I've been in the program, my dad died. And then recently my mom died right before Thanksgiving this last year. And other emotional pain. I have a husband who's here with me, actually. And he is the most fun guy in the world. He too lost his best eating buddy and drinking buddy, by the way. And the heart, I've heard over and over again, the hardest place to work this problem or this program is at home. I'm going to underscore that and say absolutely. But what's happening for me is that I'm getting better. I'm starting to be more forgiving, and I'm starting to move toward that peace and serenity that has always been the most attractive part of the 12-step programs for me. And I'm getting really good at going ahead and making amends to people, and particularly to him when I know nobody can imagine that I can be beastly, but it's really true. Really true. And he is a saint in his own little way, and he's just a plain human being like I am. So we just keep on keeping on together. The difference is today I choose to be in the relationship that I'm in with my husband. I choose to find a way to work things out. I choose to love him, and I choose to be committed to him, and that's different for me. I've had a number of marriages. Let's just say that. And we're going to go right on from there. I don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about it in secret. But anyway, I really, truly, I don't have a lot more to say because I want to hear from other people as well. But I do want to say this, that the best gift I've ever been given is this program. And I hope that I keep on until I cross over into whatever is next. I hope, and probably I'm almost ready to say that I hope in my heaven, maybe I keep on there. I'm not sure yet, because I still am hanging on to that hope that one day I'll be able to eat like other people. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, thank you so much, and I'll pass this on to Leanne.
And hello again, I'm Leanne. I think I'll qualify by telling you that I came into these rooms on May Day of 91. I've never left the rooms because I stayed here to help you people. You people were sick. I heard your stories, and you were sick people. And I figured I'd hurry through this program so that I could tell you how to run your life. And the longer I stayed, the sicker I got. So the sicker I get, the longer I'm staying. And today I know I'm here for the rest of my life. I could go into my eating history. I don't think it's necessary. But I sure wish I had a 911 plan for that, because it could have probably helped me. I was raised in the Midwest, and my dad traveled all of their married life. But when he came home, he wanted to be the boss, and he was German. And so one day I remember vividly, we were in the kitchen area, and they were getting it re-wallpapered. And the next day they were coming to tear the wallpaper down, and my dad took a mustard container and he took a ketchup container and he handed me one of them, and he said, "I bet I can squirt it farther than you can. I can hit that wall." And my mother went, "Oh." And we did it, and then he wouldn't let her clean it up. And she said, "What are they going to think?" He said, "I don't really care. It's coming down anyway." And another time they were going to paint a wall, and we had to play tic-tac-toe on the wall. But everything we did had to be related to food. Everything had food involved. When I look back into my childhood, I could almost tell you the meals we had at our events. But I wasn't a compulsive eater. Just because my baby book shows that I was always more weight than the average baby should be. Anyway, through this program, I am maintaining 115-pound weight loss. And that is not me. That is not me. I had no way of doing that. There was nothing I could have done that would have done that for me, because if there was something out there, I would have tried it. And I probably would have tried it for an hour or two. And by then, it should have at least shown some results. So with that being said, I'm going to discuss the eraser. and I'm going to discuss the matches. Now, I try and relate everything to our literature. And so I want to read something from our literature, because when I went through looking at the matches and at the eraser, I thought, now, what steps does that cover? How do you relate that to your steps? And I'm sure we've all heard the steps. And so I started my list. I'm going to make a list. I'm going to checklist. Told you I had a lot of notes. Checklist. Well, step one, yeah. Step two, yeah. Step three, mm-hmm. Four, five, yes. Yeah, I think it, every single step is affected by the eraser and the matches. And I didn't go to the others. Those were not my responsibility. So how do I look into the literature? I don't need to read the steps. So I thought, get into the literature, find the literature, see what it says. Well, guess what? Page one. It says, to whom it may concern, I have specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years. About 4 years ago, I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. In the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehab, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them they must do likewise with still others. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of men and their families. This man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. Carry the message. That's where the first message was carried. He carried it to a doctor. Today we get to carry the message. I get to carry the message because I can come up and I can give you a hug and I can say, I'm a compulsive eater, and they know who I am. I don't have to go any further than that. You can come up and you can say, I have an issue, and I can say, I'll listen. I don't know if there's anyone here that's new in the program. If you're here as a newcomer, please stay, because we're crazy people, and we love to have people come in and join us. You are the lifeblood of this program. You are the people that will keep this program going. But we are here to help you save your life. And that's what this program is all about. It's a lifesaver. It's the raft that you throw out into the ocean to help save someone. So my eraser, I get to start over. You know, they say every day is a new beginning. I get to start over. Well, it's not just tomorrow morning that I start over. It means now I can start over. Right this minute, I can stop the action. I can take the pause from step 11, and I can say, wait a minute. This is not acceptable to me. Take my breathing and say, now, the solution can be. This is what I can do. Is it what I want to do? Not necessarily, but sometimes I have to take the contrary action, because I remember what caused me all my problems. And do you know what caused me all of the problems in my life? My thinking. That's what got me in trouble. I have a sponsee, and she said, don't ever go into your head without a gun and another person. It's very dangerous in there. And you know, I never forgot that, because it's true. That's where my problem lied when I came in here. Today, I can connect from here to here. And I can do that because people taught me how. And you taught me how through the steps, the traditions, and all of the work we get to do. We have tools. We know how to get out of things. So, with that being said, we'll go to the matches. My favorite, my very favorite. Carry the message. We get to carry the message to other people who are sick. We get to carry the message that there is hope. There is hope. And it doesn't mean you have to go up and you have to sit down next to somebody and say, now listen, you're overweight and you need to concentrate on this. You better do this program. It means when I get up in the morning and I answer the telephone, I can be cheerful. I may not feel cheerful, but I will become cheerful because I am acting as if. I get to go out and maybe get coffee down when I get gas. I can walk in and say, good morning. And you know what? People where I get my coffee every morning always have to tell me their sad story today. Now, why is that? Because I give them a positive twist, and I give them hope. That's carrying the message. They may not remember me or ever have known me when I was close to 300 pounds. They don't have to, because I'm not that person today. Today, I've made the 180-degree turn, and I'm a new person inside, because this and this are connected. So with that being said, when the people that were here when we started, I said, this is a workshop. You work. It doesn't mean you get to sit. And I think you've sat long enough. We have two people who have agreed to be our EMTs. Because when you're in trouble, what do you do? Let me tell you. This is probably the first thing that we have to do. Okay? Okay, they're coming. We have two MTs. They're on their way. Okay? What do they do when they get to the emergency? What happens?
Triage.
Yes, that's what they do. The triage. First of all, you go into the green area, you go into the yellow area, or you go into the red area. The red, the yellow, and the green. There you go. So, your job is to think of a situation that you have had, or that you are having, or create one. And we will triage where you belong, and the EMTs will help you. Now, as an example, let's say I've fallen, I lost my balance, I didn't get hurt, but I'm on the floor and I'm alone and I can't get up. Okay? Do you think that's green, yellow, or red? You don't have to hurry to come get me. I'm fine where I am. I'm comfortable, but I just can't get up. Green. It's green, right. Now, yellow, how about? There's a car accident, and it's blocking lanes on the freeway. Nobody's injured, I checked.
I think it's yellow.
It's yellow, right. There you go. And the final one? I just came home and I found my roommate and they're on the floor and they're not breathing. Red. Okay, so we will triage like that, but we can put it into our program. Okay? Like an example. And I'm not going to give any more than one because I want other people to give the examples and let the EMTs triage. Before you speak, you must come to the microphone, sign a waiver, because this is being recorded. Perfect example, several years ago, a man in his first 30 days called the main office and asked our co-founder, Rachel, I am so hungry. And do you know what the response was? Get over it, we're all hungry. I think that was maybe green? You think? We've all been there. We've all been there. So, you know, it can be a major thing in your life. It can be anything you want. But we'd appreciate it if you'd come up, sign in, give us a scenario, and let us triage. Okay? And if you have other ideas after it's been triaged, you're welcome to share them. You do not have to have abstinence to share in a workshop here. And we want you to all participate, so you're welcome to come up. And that's how this program is going to work today in this room. So, yes, please.
Hi, I'm Q, compulsive overeater. And this actually happened to me. It's my grandson's first birthday. And there's all these goodies there. And it was very tempting. And I made the mistake of that first compulsive bite. And I just shouldn't have. And then my mind went crazy. It just said, well, I did that. So now I can go to the store and I can get more. You know? And I just, it set me off. It was terrible. So what do I do?
I'm Teresa. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Teresa.
I've had that happen before where I've taken that compulsive bite, and it is a miserable situation. And I think, for me, the first thing to do is just to stop and pray and not take any action, because when that's happened to me before at work, I started obsessing about where I was going to call in food and I was going to pick it up on the way home, and playing the tape to the end, how miserable I'm going to feel, if I go ahead and eat more. I have physical issues. I mean, my hands swell, my joints get tight. I can't hardly look at myself in the mirror after that happens. And just to know that it's just a craving and it's going to pass, and usually it helps me if I drink a bunch of water, and then call somebody as soon as I can, preferably my sponsor, and get to a meeting. If there's not a meeting available, there's always a phone bridge meeting coming up that you can access. And just know that I just have to make it through that day, just that day. And then tomorrow will be a new day. And so just breaking it down into those little, increments of time, sometimes just making it through the hour or the next 15 minutes or whatever it is. That's what helps me. Thank you.
Thank you. And somebody else?
I just want to add, I got through his second birthday without taking a bite.
See how it works?
Hi, I'm Marilyn, compulsive eater.
Hi, Marilyn.
And I've had the same problem, and I listened to everything that you just said, and it all makes sense. I've had 8 years of abstinence, and then I went out for 4 years, and then I had 100 days, and now I have 16 days, and all of that makes sense, but when I'm in the thinking, I don't want to think about making phone calls. I have this thing with whenever I pass Sprouts, I have to go in. The first time I went in, I asked the guy, could you give me a sample? He said, just help yourself. And that was like the ruination. It's like it's like entertainment to me to pass Sprouts and go in and help myself. And when I've had my days of abstinence, it kind of leaves me, and I don't think about that. But on certain days when I do, and then I have this other issue. Before I came back to how last year there was a certain flavor of and they only had it like once, one month a year, and I went out and I bought $400 worth, and it's still in my freezer. And the freezer that I have it in, I bought a separate freezer to house them. And I don't think anybody in this program would ever buy another freezer to house $400 worth of amazingly, they're still there, and I just needed to know that if I wanted them, I had that flavor. And maybe in a year, I only had like, I don't know, 10, and they're still there. And somebody said I should donate them, but I just can't do it. It just, I don't know, I think that I may be sicker than everybody else. But I do that with a lot of food. I stock up on things because I think they're going to, abstinent things, I think that they're going to go out, and it's like my drug of choice, this one particular item that's abstinent, and I have a real problem. What do I do about that?
Hi, everyone. My name's Rowdy. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Rowdy.
I'm grateful to be here. Thank you. And thank you for sharing that. I'm kind of struck by the beauty of our program is that we all have the same disease. And that's the disease of compulsive eating. And that is a disease of the mind and the body. But we all have different things and different ways. The disease is beautiful in a nightmarish way in what it will tell you to get you to eat. Now, what it will tell you and you and you is different than what it'll tell me. But it's constantly changing. You know, I'm not a compulsive eater. I guess I should eat. Oh, there's that one food substance. I could probably just only have one. You know, my life is so hard, I need to eat. My life is so good, I need to eat. You know, this is my least favorite. I can always start again tomorrow. Now, I have had... And in my other 12-step recovery, a sponsee who said, who the F are you to think you get another chance? There are so many of us out there dying. Who are you that says, I can go out and I can eat this substance, but I'll just go back into CEA tomorrow and everything will be okay? You know, so for me, when food thoughts come, regardless of what they are, I have to go back to that first step. I have to really recognize and remember what a nightmarish hell my life was when I was trapped in the obsession and the compulsion and I could not get out. I knew I was going to die from this disease, you know? And so a big tool is then I start accessing the tools and I start calling people and I start talking about that. I'm having a food thought. You know, before I even get, you know, out of the car, the phone is in my hand. And that's only because I've worked the tools over and over every day that it's become a habit to have the phone come in my hand before the money goes out on the counter. You know, before it was opposite. You know, I would find myself buying stuff and then I'd go, how did that happen? I wasn't going to do that this morning. You know, I made a plan this morning. I wasn't going to eat today. And then I would wake up the next morning and had eaten. And I'd be like, how could that have happened? You know, I was dumbfounded. And so, I mean, working our tools is a sort of platitude to answer any question of any problem, you know, is work the tools. But for me... what I had to do, especially when I was new and there were a lot of food thoughts, is I had to constantly recognize the terror, the four deadly horsemen of this disease. I had to recognize that it is never a guarantee that I get another abstinence, that I get another chance. And then I had to recognize, I had to use the tools, remember the first step, go back to how powerlessness I was, and then access those tools immediately before that thought was able to go any further. And once that happened for a while, it became natural. But it takes time for it to become natural to access the tool before I access the food thought. So that's all I have to share on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judy. Judy W., compulsive eater. What do you, I'd like to, I just spent about 4 days with people that are not recovering compulsive eaters. And my problem is that most of my life I wanted to either people please so people would accept me, or when I got to the point where I was 350 pounds, I just wanted to be invisible. And I was at 350 pounds, unless it was really obnoxious to some people and they would criticize openly. And so at two different times, the people that I was with told me that I made them feel uncomfortable. And, you know, I want to participate in life today. I do not want to check out. And the food was the quickest way for me to check out and numb out and isolate. But today I want to participate in people's lives. And so I guess my question is, how do you... work your program. I mean, I worked my program in spite of that, and I realized that it had nothing to do with me, that I was making them feel uncomfortable because I wasn't regulating what they were doing. But how do you be okay with yourself knowing that, I mean, this is a life and death matter for me. I've relapsed in 25 years in 12-step food programs. So this is not a, I mean, I will die from this disease with one compulsive bite. And I loved what was just shared about how do I know that I'm going to get another chance. I do believe in a loving, gentle, kind, merciful, gracious God today. But, you know, how many times do you get? And so today I choose to work this program because I know my life depends on it. So if you have any ideas about how I can acknowledge myself, even though other people think it's offensive to them.
Thank you, Judy.
Hi, I'm Susan, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Susan.
And, well, what came to me with the sharing is disease busters, you know, the seven tools. And for me, what's helped me is when I so relate to that thinking and of, oh, you know, maybe I'll just do it. I can start over tomorrow kind of thing. And I've done that. And what helps me a lot is there's not enough. It could be a million freezers full of whatever it is. It will not be enough for me. It never is. And also what helps me is to that self-hatred after I've slipped, that absolute self-disgust. Oh, my God, you know, that kind of a thing. And that is not worth anything to me anymore. I don't want to feel that. I feel pretty good inside. I know there's stuff I have to work on. I'm doing another fourth step. That's another EMT thing I need because I keep putting it off. But and that's one of the goals I have for this conference is that I'm going to get that done. So, but I know that I don't want to feel that way anymore. Nothing's worth it to me. And I guess the other thing I think about too is when I'm not abstinent, I can't give service. And that program won't be here tomorrow. This program will be here tomorrow if everybody thought that way. Well, I'll just, you know. If nobody could give service, where would it be? Who could we call? You know, nobody would be able to lead a meeting. I mean, and that was taking this program for granted. Because this is the only program. I mean, when I started, I was fortunate enough to go to a meeting where there was 200 people, and I listened to every story. And I didn't have to do a lot of those things, so it was research for me. Because thank God I didn't, but I listened because I know I would if I went back out there. I would have to, you know, I would try this. And none of them work. And go to any garage sale and you see all these books of how to do this, how to do that, how to do, they're at garage sales because, you know, of course. you know. So anyway, and I, what I, another little tool I do is always put my higher power in the seat next to me, goes into stores with me, goes into restaurants. I work out of the country, and I was in a country in Italy where, you know, I was in the wrong country to, for the food and everything there. And I would sit with all my colleagues, and they would be able to do this and that and the food and you know, want all that. And I enjoyed every moment I was there because of this program. And I wouldn't have. I would have been in self-hatred, blah, 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 you know. And people looked at me like, you can't have that. You can't, what are you, you know, and do that. I just go, you know, it's what I choose to do, you know, today. I didn't go into it. But it was, you know, it wasn't hard because of this program, because it works. So anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Do we have anyone else who would like to give us a problematic situation?
Hi, I'm Mayer, and I am a compulsive eater.
Hi, Mayer.
And I don't really know what I'm going to say, except I've been in the program since 1987. And I have a lot of success in the mother program. And I think the biggest difference there is that I don't mind being one among many. It's just I never question from the day I came in how it works. I never question maybe I should change this, maybe they need to do that, or it's too many people, or nothing. I was excited to be one of them, and how it seems like I always find a reason or a little thing to make me different than everybody in the room, but not necessarily like I'm better, but like, oh God, why can't I do it? Oh my God, why can't I do this program? It's kind of like that. I have gone from beating myself because of how much work I do otherwise, you know, whether I'm in how or not, I'm going to keep working on myself. And so I'm realizing that knowledge alone, knowledge is good because we need to know what to do, but I know knowledge can't do anything for me unless I want to be abstinent. Sometimes I don't even want to be abstinent. And I've seen people try to get sober and they can't even want to be sober. I've seen them and I could feel what they're going through, but I just sometimes feel like it's not for me. And I keep going to a meeting every day and I keep doing everything every day and having the food and still just like doing that one or two little slips, you know. And even the word slip just sounds so failing. The words they use just sound so failing in the program. They make you feel, make me feel. When I hear these words, I make myself feel really like a failure. I'm going to take full responsibility. And so I'm abstinent today. But there's a part of me that says, if I want a little more, it's in the back of my head, you know. It's not me, because, it's, you know, it's, I think it's my ego. But the more I face my thoughts, my defects of character, the more I face those things, that I'm feeling uncomfortable, that I'm around certain people at work, and success bothers me. I still have an issue with too much success. But I can't stand failure. How about that?
I'd just like to share a short story in regard to that. 3-4 years ago, I got hammers and I sprayed them gold and I decorated each one of them. And I sent them as Christmas gifts to my sponsees. And I had a note on it saying, the hammer is not a tool of the program. Put it on the wall. Because I think that we tend to beat ourselves up a lot. And a lot of times people say, oh, I know, I got the hammer up there. I'm not going to use it. I promise. Or, yeah, I'll put it back on there, because we forget. But the hammer is not a tool of our program. I've never found it in the books that we should use that on ourselves or other people. We're here to love you until you can love yourself.
Thank you, Leanne. We refer you to your 12-step emergency kit. And shall we close with the serenity? Can we hold hands?
things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thy will not mine be done.
Back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it. So work it.
Thank you all. This was the best program. I'm so glad that I didn't know what it was about.